At sea, I was spoiled to nature's regular performances, the unique perspectives of rainbows and sunsets that no one else would ever see. On this passage, I had an entirely new night visitor. For the past month, Halley's Comet was faintly visible from southern Africa. Populist astronomers had overstated its expected brightness and stirred up a frenzy of interest in the returning comet. For city dwellers, Halley's less-than-stellar brightness was a disappointment. Out here, 1,000 miles from the desert lands of Namibia, as far from the star-eclipsing lights of civilization as a man could get, the comet's tail brightened and flowered. The comet reappeared each night as a frosty white streak over several degrees of arc across the southeastern sky. I lay in my bunk gazing at the comet for hours through the open hatchway. If Adam deviated from her northwest alignment, I knew as well as any telltale compass could show that I was off course by the comet's tail disappearing from my picture-framed view. My comet served as a guiding apparition as real as the star that led the three wise men to Bethlehem. On a Sunday morning, I put down the remaining pages of my 10th book since leaving Cape Town and lifted my eyes to the hazy outline of land below a cluster of low clouds. My eyes remained locked on the horizon for another hour until I was certain it was land and not a mirage born of the overwhelming emptiness all around it. The island lay anchored in mid-ocean isolation, rising above a range of dormant volcanoes resting just below the surface of the South Atlantic. From a distance, St. Helena, which is a mere 6 miles across, appears almost as tall as it is wide. In my imagination, I follow its slopes down to the sea floor and picture its violent birth millions of years ago. Hours later, we glided past a towering stone buttress marked in my chart as the Barn and its 2,000-foot-high peak named the Haystack. Here in the island's uninhabited north coast, the mountains display all their altitude in a single vertical wall. 5 miles along this desolate, sunburnt coast, the small harbor of James Bay hove into view. A traditional 3-masted sailing ship rested at anchor close under the scarred mountain. I lowered 2 anchors in 45 feet of water in company with several other visiting yachts and moored local fishing boats. James Bay is more of an open roadstead than proper bay. This slight indent in the rocky coast at the base of a valley is also the only permitted anchorage among the handful of bays on this coast of barren basaltic outcroppings. At least the island's wind shadow afforded some protection from the prevailing southeast trade winds, if not from the perpetual sea swell hooking around the circular island. Besides causing the anchored boats to roll their guts out, the swell makes landing a dinghy wet and hazardous. St. Helena was long a favorite stopover for ships returning to Europe along the East Indies spice trade route. Its sometimes tragic history of human occupation began in the early 16th century, when a Portuguese ship exiled a horribly mutilated prisoner on the uninhabited island. In India, the unfortunate wretch had had his nose, ears, an arm, and the thumb of the opposite hand removed for the crime of insurrection in the Portuguese colony of Goa before being marooned on this empty island. He existed for 10 lonely years on the island, surviving off the pity of sailors on passing ships who provided him goats and essential supplies before he returned to Portugal and eventually had an audience with the Pope in Rome. There he was granted a wish. Thus he returned to St. Helena by choice this time to live out the rest of his life in solitude. Eventually the British wrested control of the island from the contesting powers of Portugal, the Netherlands, and France. St. Helena is best known as the home of a more famous exile. When the British brought the defeated French Emperor Napoleon Bonaparte here to live in enforced isolation until his death in 1821.